This is Rakadex After Hours.
Joy and glad tidings and other seasonal words reach your ears because, of course, it is Rack Addicts After Hours time, episode 153. The Rallentando effect. Do you remember that from an episode a while ago? I surely don't. But you're listening to Ben, he's rambling weirdly and now referring to himself in the third person, which only happens when he's either over or under caffeinated, and I don't know which I am right now. Pete, save me. What's going on? What have you been up to?
I've been freezing.
Ooh, so have I. Ugh.
It's just so cold.
Mm-hmm. And remember, there is always a disclaimer when we complain about the weather. Firstly, we're English. It is in our nature. We must complain about the weather. Yes, we know you have it worse in Siberia or something, but we like to complain, and we're very sensitive about these things. I can't feel my toes, and that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the heating's actually come on yet.
But you have been deploying the fancy heated blanket that's behind me.
I've been deploying anything that can keep me warm, to be honest.
Anything and everything.
At the same time, trying to be sparing with the usage of the central heating.
And the synths, potentially. They could be expensive to run.
Yeah, they haven't been on too much recently.
So apart from shivering, what have you been doing? Shivering a bit more?
Yes, so I've been doing more Christmas preparation, to be honest. It's coming at us like a steam train now, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. Wait, hang on, is it next week?
Yes.
Whoa. Okay, yeah, I wasn't prepared. Well, I am prepared. My shopping is done. My wrapping is not. What have you been preparing?
I just today managed to get all my Christmas cards posted.
Wonderful.
Although it was tricky getting to the post office without freezing.
Slipping and sliding. Yes, we had snow. Bizarre.
Yeah, it doesn't snow very often around here, does it?
Not at all.
And in theory, we do more.
I don't pay attention to the weather forecast. When's that?
During the course of this week, apparently.
Oh dear. Well, at least I don't need to drive anywhere, so we'll be all right.
Yes. I used to enjoy it when I was young, but now it's a real pain in the backside, especially for transport. I mean, we normally only get snow after Christmas, don't we? In sort of January, February, if we get any at all. But you never know. It might even be a white Christmas. I doubt it.
Once again, disclaimer here. When there is any sign of ice or snow, the entire country comes to a halt because we just don't know what to do. If you want a laugh, go on TikTok and search for M25. I'm sure you'll see why we're so unprepared. Or how unprepared we are. Or something. It's a laugh.
I was listening to an expert on the radio, and he was discussing the fact that he'd written the government report on contingency for these type of extreme weather events.
Extreme. Yeah, anyway, go
on. It's regarded as an extreme if it creates problems with transport and other parts of the economy. And he was saying that because of global warming, the extreme events are likely to get more frequent and more
extremery.
more abrupt, more sudden, more unexpected. So here we go, more of this. But anyway, other than that, yes, Christmas preparations, not long to go now. And soon it will be behind us.
Indeed. And NAM, is that in January?
I'm not sure, because it always should be the winter NAM.
Oh, yeah, because that one has kind of nothing in it.
I don't think NAM is quite the show it used to be. From what I've heard is that a lot of people that used to exhibit at the show have realised they can do it virtually after 2 years of abstinence because of the pandemic. And it costs an extremely large amount of money to have a stand. And if you can maintain your level of sales without spending maybe several hundred thousand dollars on a prime location at the Anaheim Convention Centre, why would you do it? So they're not.
Fair enough.
Anyway, how about you?
Shivering, of course, shivering a bit. Yes, that's my train of thought now stopping. Thinking about saving electricity and all those things that everybody else is at the moment, we have quite an exciting technology in our kitchen now. We've got a toaster.
Wow.
Yeah, because we were using the grill for our toasting escapades. Not very efficient, but it's nice having a toaster again. I was considering last weekend, I was thinking, maybe I should do the thing that is in this email. I received a biannual email from Restrap, a company that makes bikepacking bags and other such things. They have a challenge, which I've completed once in the summer, called the Solstice Century, to ride 100 miles on the solstice, both of them. Summer is easy. It's the longest day. Now it's the shortest day, or on the weekend closest to it anyway. So I thought, yeah, they give you a little patch, a little sew-on patch if you do it. So yeah, I can be bribed by a very cheap sewable. So I thought, I'll give it a go. And yeah, I'm not going to do that anymore. That's a terrible idea. Why would I go out now that it's supposed to rain this weekend, I think, in the freezing cold with no light to just try and ride 100 miles when I haven't even been on the bike in a couple of months or a month? Stupid idea.
I can't remember if it's a sadist or a masochist.
Both. Well, I came to my senses, so I'm not going to do that. The other thing that's been quite fun when we're at home shivering and twiddling our thumbs is Spotify Wrapped, which, if you aren't a Spotify person, is a playlist or series of playlists or something that gets generated towards the end of the year, summarizing your listening habits over the year. And it can be kind of interesting. Mine was full of metal and prog rock, and as you'd expect. But what was entertaining about my partner's was that 90-something percent of the music that she listened to was Don Broco. It was just one band for the entire year. It was a good laugh. It's just your top tracks: Don Broco, Don Broco, Don Broco, Taylor Swift, Don Broco. Entertainment was had.
I take it from that she likes Don Broco.
Yeah, maybe. So that's kind of all I've been doing. Nothing super exciting. Let us transition into the news that we have found. Some small ones first. An update. The Audio Anima Omega, which confused me last time because of the strange name. Kickstarter, physical modelling synth, kind of interesting potentially. Either way, 250% funded. So clearly, people want the thing and the funding window is closed. At the time of recording, the funding window has 21 hours remaining. They wanted £68,000 and they've got £181,000. So that's cool. Lots of stuff. Physical modelling things. I'm sure it'll be in the hands of backers within the month. I'm joking. It'll be a couple of years, I'm sure. So there's that one. Increasing in size of news article, we'll go to a product category that doesn't appear very often. Desktop analog filters with CV. I can only think of without CV. If we exclude CV from the equation, I think I can think of three. Can you think of many?
No.
I'm trying to think which the ones I'm thinking of are. So Electron Analog Heat, that's a desktop filter, though it isn't analog, so I've kind of broken my own rules already. Ooh, yeah, actually, the other one that I'm thinking of isn't analog either. Okay, let's rephrase it to be analog.
I think the problem is the analog side of it, because I can think of several digital ones.
Ah, so the only other thing that I can think of, for analog at least, is the Shermann Filter Bank.
Yes.
That thingy, which, does it have like a spring I don't even know. Shermann Filter Bank, pretty niche. And jumping into this analog desktop filter situation is Herbs and Stones. Have you heard of Herbs and Stones?
I have not heard of Herbs and Stones.
Ah, well, Herbs and Stones are in fact a little tiny company that have some interesting bits and pieces. I'm going to have to jump onto their website so I can actually tell you the things they have, because I can't remember the names. Esoteric Electronics is their tagline. Herbs and Stones have 5 products. They have Gentle Wham, Liquid Foam and its Eurorack version, Pathways, and the new Solid Felt, which is the desktop stereo analog mixer. Those other products, by the way, Gentle Wham is a 6-voice analog drum synth module. Liquid Foam is a TB-303-ish kind of mono groove box situation, and Pathways is a matrix mixer, and there's lots of CV stuff going on with all of these. So the new bad boy: desktop, stereo, analog, multi-mode, filter. So what's cool about this, apart from it being weird and niche, and if you need it, there it is. CV on your cutoff and resonance, I believe. High, low, and band pass. It looks like you've got some phase shifting type stuff, because there's a central section with 0 and 180 degrees and CVs and things, so that could be cool. It could do phasery stuff, that's nice. You've got bypass buttons and an A arrow B, which could potentially suggest series and parallel operation. And that is all I can kind of decipher from this picture here. Ooh, apart from the fact that it's center negative 9 volt, so it's designed clearly with living next to guitar pedals in mind.
Mm.
An interesting box. Again, niche, but cool. And from what I've heard and seen of their other boxes, they do have a bit of an interesting character and are, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. They're kind of charming,
okay,
in a way.
What is their mixer like in respect to, how many channels has it got?
Well, this is a matrix mixer. So it's going to be 4x4, in fact.
Oh, I see. It's that style.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping it was going to be something with more channels.
No, unfortunately, it's the strange... Well, unfortunately for us, because we're not experts in the matrix mixer world, I think there are a lot of people that use a matrix mixer once and go, oh, the possibilities, and then love them. And then there's people like us who, well, me certainly, I have never wanted one. Have you got a matrix mixer over there in the Moth?
I want to say no. I think the only thing I've got is the IntelliGel Planar, or Planar, depending on how you want to pronounce it.
You've got a lot of old kind of classic tip-top stuff.
Yes.
Do you have the, I think it's the Z8000, which can be kind of a sequencer as well?
I do have a tip-top audio mixer, but it's a very basic thing, and it's just to aggregate some of the drum voices.
Mm, right. Oh, that would be the one that's kind of built to go with them. It's that same steel.
Yes.
I know the one. So no, neither of us are matrix mixer people. There was a really good video, and I can't remember who it was, explaining the how, the why, and the what of matrix mixing, and it was enlightening because I hadn't known. They can do all sorts. Anyway, quite a big one here. It is news and sad news. There is an update for Mutable Instruments Platts, which in theory is compatible with the DIY versions, assuming the DIY-er has DIY'd sufficiently accurately. I don't really know the ins and outs. But there is I think it's a mode, yes, which adds DX7 compatible 6 operator FM synthesis in there, which is super cool. By DX7 compatible, that means presets should work, which is really interesting.
And when did we say that Mutable Instruments is due to finish completely?
Well, I had that, but I closed it because I'm silly. Well, it is the homepage of mutableinstruments.net. The production of all modules has halted, and Mutable Instruments will permanently shut down in December 2022, and support is still available, support and repairs, until June 2023.
At least it's not a sudden death type of ending.
Yeah, totally. And quite nice to give a little present on the way out. That's quite nice. So you can transmit audio data into the timbre input, which is how you'll get the patches in and out. I was wondering.
So how are you doing that in a kind of modem squelchy fashion?
Exactly. So there's a new bank of pitched synthesis modes. These are classic wave shapes with a filter, phase distortion and modulation, the 6 operator FM, which is the one compatible with the DX7 bits, wave terrain synthesis. I'm going to see if I can find out what that is in a second. A string machine emulation with a stereo filter and chorus, and a 4 variable square voice for chords and arpeggios, which is quite cool. Now, what on earth is wave terrain synthesis? Okay, so an extension of wave table synthesis. So the wavetable lookup is extended from 2 dimensions into 3, which is pretty interesting. And this is a very academic looking paper, and I will stop reading it now because my brain may explode if I keep going. There we are. If you've got a Mutable Platts, go and check out that firmware update because it sounds rather powerful. Finally, the newsworthiness. Behringer and other retailers and partners and such have released audio demos and bits of the Pro 800. Sounds pretty cool. It's in that module format, like the Neutron, the big wide one, the Neutron format. Sounds cool, but it's £599. And I had gone, they should have made it cheaper, it would have been better, more competitive, under £400. But then, yeah, everything's expensive now, so I have to recalibrate my sights a bit. And recalibrating means, how much is the DeepMind? Well, there we go. 618 from certain retailers at the moment, so similar priceage. And you do get a keyboard. That's a tough one.
It's quite a dramatically different sounding synth.
Mm. No,
it's got a lot of grit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got. They have seemed to have captured that sort of sequential beef with it.
Beef.
But it's been a long time coming because they've been threatening this particular unit for quite some time.
Indeed, and they even upped the polyphony. It was originally going to be 6, like the Prophet, 600, but they gave it an extra couple of voices just because.
Well, allows them to call it something else as well,
doesn't it? Yeah, get around those pesky patents.
So I would imagine the core engine's going to be quite good, but it's going to be, again, the digital side of the unit.
Yeah, because it does have presets, and I'm worried, if I'm honest, by the interface.
Yes, I haven't really studied it that much at this stage, but we'll have to see when we can actually get our hands on one of these.
I don't know what to call it, but it's that flat plastic thing with those kind of raised squishy buttons. These guys.
Yes. And my experience of those in all sorts of situations, because they were quite often used for lighting controllers, DMX controllers, and they have a tendency to kind of split eventually, don't they?
Oh,
because there's a kind of little, I don't know what type of switch or the definition of that type of switch is, but it's a kind of thin layer of metallic material.
So that squashing kind of, it just manually completes a contact.
Yes. And typically the plastic membrane with all the text over the top eventually starts to fail.
Right.
And the actual metal sort of switch mechanisms can break through the plastic.
Maybe it's really cheap to manufacture those. I can imagine it could be squirted out of a glorified printer in some form.
I mean, have they gone for that because that's what the original sequential unit had in the respect of how it was controlled? Or have they done it for cost? Because they do try and maintain the aesthetics of the unit. They're trying to create a tribute of.
Oh, yeah, tribute. It's not a clone. But yeah, it looks like that was the thing. Yeah. It looks like that was the interface on the original.
So they're going for as much authenticity as they can in that department. It's a shame it doesn't have some nice clicky-clacky buttons.
Oh, but clicky-clacky would be expensive, unfortunately.
Yes, would add a lot of expense. And it's already quite expensive for a relatively small desktop unit. So it's in the same price point as, you know, other things that are not physically that spectacular to gaze upon, like the Malevolent, for instance.
I was in the shop the other day and I saw it and went, that says Future Sound Systems on it. What? Since when did we do small brands like that? Brilliant. Good to see it.
Yeah, but it's got a really horrible tiny little keyboard.
Oh yeah, is it as bad as those micro Korgs?
I think it might be the worst tiny little keyboard.
Ooh.
I've come across.
Now that's a claim to fame. The worst tiny keyboard you can find.
If only they'd put a full-size keybed in it. I mean, they could have charged another £200.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. In the price bracket, and of course, Polysynths, Cobalt 8, 569, Hydrosynth Explorer, Mini Freak, and then we're down at kind of 529 for the Minilog XD, and that's going to be the first analog one. Let's go up a little bit. Studio Logic Sledge. What a weird one.
I wonder if it's going to follow the same trajectory as some of the other modules that they've brought out in the past, where they come out at a certain price point and then they go down somewhat.
Would hope so.
Yes. But so, as you said earlier, everything is getting so expensive.
649 is going to be the DeepMind 12.
12? 649?
Module, that is.
Really? 649?
Yep.
Okay. Is that more expensive than the DeepMind 12 with the keyboard that we looked at earlier?
No, the 12 with the keyboard is still a smidge more. At least I think it was. 809.
809?
Yeah, that's the DeepMind 12 with keyboard.
Mm.
But yeah, there's really not a lot analog poly in that price range though, so it has got its niche. It's all the digital stuff that's going to be competing. But nothing with a kind of vintage character, certainly.
I don't think we're going to see these in the store or any stores for quite some time, from what I've heard.
On the grapevine.
Yes. I know it's important to generate some excitement with the general public as soon as possible, but with the issues with manufacturing in China, because they're still going through all sorts of strangeness with lockdowns and so forth, I think it's most probably quite precarious to serve up anything.
Gonna be hard, isn't it? Yeah. Quite tricky, most likely.
Yeah.
There we go. Those are our synthesizery news bits. And of course, that means it's time for our miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. Pete, are you ready to go?
I am ready to go.
Wonderful. Go then, go.
Right, this one is definitely right up your street.
Before you go, sorry to break your flow, I did watch all the way through one of those Bonsai videos that you recommended last week or the week before. excellent. And of course, what I wasn't expecting was the production to kind of, obviously really high production value, stay the same across the whole thing. But then two-thirds of the way in, he sort of stopped and went, oh, cool, we've got to let it grow for like a year. And then he came back
later.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Anyway.
Okay. Well, as I said earlier, this one is really up your street. Mm-hmm. I thought this was a little bit of a cracker. The YouTube channel is called Ethan Colander. And I'm not sure if he... Well, I'm pretty sure he doesn't own the intellectual property of these particular films. But what they are mini documentaries featuring the members of Genesis talking about the creation of their classic albums. And this has all been done for their 2007 remastering and release of those particular albums. It's all quite interesting in relation to the creation of those albums. And it's quite nice to hear from the horse's mouth exactly what went on.
Okay, you're going to need to help me find this one.
Ethan.
Yeah.
Callender.
And can we do that surname again?
Callender.
I'm definitely going to watch these when I get home. We've got Selling England by the Pound, my personal favourite Genesis album, Trespass, Nursery Crime and Foxtrot here. Ooh, and Lamb Lies Down.
Yes.
Wonderful.
So it's literally all the original Peter Gabriel singing stuff. And they actually get all the members of Genesis, all the original members of Genesis together, and they're all interviewed individually and separately. And it's also interesting some of the machinations that went on and the tensions and the stresses that were certainly evident within or during the creation of various albums.
I'm not sure if it was a section of one of these or potentially the behind the scenes for their... Not the last Domino tour, but the one before. Yeah, their second to last kind of world tour. I think it was the behind the scenes on that one, where it was some comment which had all of those kind of, that just hint of, ooh, there is some drama going on behind the scenes, which was kind of, oh yeah, we'll just do what Tony says to do anyway. It's just quite entertaining.
Well, it's effectively Tony's band.
It seems so in certain respects, yeah.
And I hadn't realised, even though I've been a long-time Genesis fan, how integral he is to the writing of the music.
Yeah.
Particularly was evident was the tensions that build up when they were recording the last album that Peter Gabriel was on, which is Lamb Lies Down.
Indeed.
And that produced quite a lot of stresses and strains.
Mm.
And he subsequently left the band after that.
Yeah. Well, there's, if you want to argue about it, technically there is the Seconds Out Live album, which he does feature on from some shows after when they were touring The Lamb Lies Down, and then he left. Anyway.
Yes. But it's quite interesting because quite literally some of those albums are over 50 years old,
yeah,
which is a real chunk of time.
Mm. Yeah, no, I'm going to really enjoy these. I'm going to send them to my dad as well.
I thought you'd like that one.
Ooh, definitely. Thank you very much.
That is my multimedia recommendation for this week, the YouTube channel Ethan Colander, and specifically the videos featuring the members of Genesis talking about the making of four of their early albums. There was also some quite old, it looks like it's been taken from VHS tape, featuring things on David Bowie and also Japan.
Yeah, there's some Genesis live shows as well with like Behind the Lines, One for the Vine, Duchess and other classics. But yeah, they do look lo-fi, let's put it that way.
I don't know what the situation is with this channel. It's clearly not been taken down because these were published quite some time ago. But some artists don't necessarily have the YouTube channels taken down. They just have the funds or the earnings from that channel directed to themselves. I've had that happen to us as well.
On a Rack Addicts thing? Or your Rack Addicts YouTube?
Yes.
Which?
Did an interview with London Modular.
Oh, yeah.
And they said, oh, put some of our stuff on there.
Yeah, and then the label goes,
mm-mm-mm. Yeah, and as soon as we published, it got flagged.
Yeah, most of the time it's quite friendly, though. It just goes, this isn't a copyright strike. We're just directing the funds, and you can't have any advertising revenue on this one, which is okay.
Yeah, literally the second we published it. So I don't know if they've got some sort of form of Shazam or that type of algorithm running, but it was the speed that it recognised it. It literally somehow spotted it during the upload.
Yeah, that happened to me with my own music, which was quite entertaining. I put up a sort of full album video on YouTube, and it goes, this is the property of Robert Rhodes Music. And I went, yes. So you have to file the dispute and go, That's me. Which is quite entertaining.
Yeah, I've heard about artists that haven't got the funds, even though it's themselves.
Really? That's annoying.
Because of just the complexity of how the music was published in the first place. Mm. It can be a real problem.
Definitely. I don't want to go down that road.
Anyway, I'm sure you and your father will enjoy these videos.
Most definitely. Thank you very much. Right, my miscellaneous multimedia recommendation, that's as fast as I've ever said it before, is strange, creepy, and unsettling. So don't watch this in bed with all the lights off unless you have a hardened not fear of shadows and I don't know what I'm saying. This is an artist called Lorne. Thank you, James, for introducing me. And the track is called Entropy, with three Ys, because why not? The video is clearly some kind of AI generation thing. It's unsettling and perfect. I was talking to Ant from the Modcaf about this, and we agreed that this is probably the only genre where it kind of works, because most of the results end up kind of creepy and unsettling. Wouldn't you know, the music is kind of creepy and unsettling and EDM-ish, if you... That's the broadest genre in the world, isn't it? It's electronic. It has a beat. So it's EDM. It isn't really. If you are a fan of Void Null, you should be. If you're not, go and search Void_Null on YouTube. You won't regret it. This will appeal. So that is Lorn, LORN, not LAWN, LORN, Entropy, with three Ys. Thank me later. On Facebook and Instagram and YouTube and wherever else we are, at Rack Addicts UK. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you had a nice bath. We'll catch you in the next one. Farewell.